for today's Daf Yud Aleph, and we're going to start with three lines down from the top. The Gemara has brought a whole series and continues to bring a series of statements of Rava Bar Machasya in the name of Rav Chama Bar Guria in the name of Rav. And here's another one of those statements. Kol ir shegagosel gvoim mibeis hakneses. It's not proper to have buildings, Jewishly owned buildings, in a city in which the roofs, which are being used for personal purposes, are above the shul. And the punishment for such a thing is very severe. L'sof chareva, the city will not continue to exist. Shenemar, Apostle in Ezra, l'romem es beis Elokeinu, u'lahamid es charvosav, v'laseis lanu gader b'Yehuda u'b'Yerushalayim. It seems that what will keep the city going, lahamid, is the fact that romemu es beis Hashem. We have elevated the house of God. The house of God is a reference to the synagogue. And by elevating the synagogue, we have guaranteed that the synagogue will continue to exist. And that's Gader b'Yehuda b'Yerushalayim. Gader meaning a protective fence around Yehuda. It'll be a city that's built and will not be destroyed. The implication is that if we're not merome mispeis Elokeinu, if the synagogue is not uplifted above us, our buildings, then lebasof chareva, it will unfortunately be destroyed. So we need a kavod for the Beis HaKnesses. The Beis HaKnesses is called the Migdash Ma'at, and therefore we have to give it kavod, and we have to make sure that we're not using space for our own personal enjoyment that's above that of the synagogue. Now some Rishonim say that the reason why putting these gagos above the synagogue and using them for your own personal purposes is prohibited because it's a bizoyon to the Beis HaKnesses. It is in some way insulting to the Beis HaKnesses that we're using for our purposes a makom gavoa, an area that's higher than that of the synagogue. Others say that no, it's not a matter of bizoyon, we're not in any way insulting the synagogue, but we don't give it the proper kavod if we are on top looking down from our roof onto the Beis HaKnesses. So again, it's either a matter of avoiding bizoyon, in a sense a negative, or perhaps it's giving kavod to the Beis HaKnesses. In a minute we'll see the difference between those two approaches that sound very similar, but there's a subtle important difference between the two of them. And that we'll see now in the next line in the Gemara. So if you're following in the Gemara, we're now seven lines down from the top of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Hani Mili, when is it a problem? When is it prohibited? That's only bibatim. Batim means homes that are occupied, where we do our normal chores. And those are private houses. Aval bikishkushe ve'avar vane re. These are different kinds of buildings that are not erected for personal use, but rather they're there for beauty. So their purpose is, shall we say, for pleasure. Like you go to certain cities in Europe, even today, you'll see buildings that are not occupied by people. No one's doing their chores there, but rather they're beautiful architectural structures. And we're talking also about towers. You know, take for example in Paris, you have the Eiffel Tower, right? These kinds of buildings, leslan ba. This is not a problem, because if the isur of having these roofs on top of the synagogue, higher up than the synagogue, is because of bizayon, it's only a bizayon to the Beis HaKnesses if we're doing our chores above the synagogue. But if we're not using it for any purposes of shimush, of chores, but rather it's only there as an object of beauty, that's not considered a bizayon to the Beis HaKnesses. However, according to the second approach, that we have to give cover to the Beis HaKnesses by making sure that it's the highest structure in the city, then we would not have this exception in the case of towers or architecturally beautiful structures. Even then, since those structures rise above the synagogue, then there's a lack of kavod for the Beis HaKnesses. So the Rishonim say that whether or not we can rely on this license, or this permissibility, that would depend upon how we understand the prohibition of having the gagos above, higher than the Beis HaKnesses. Omer Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi boasts about himself. He was the head hancho, he was the great Talmud Chacham in a city which is called Masa Mechasio, that's the name of the city. And Na Avde, I made a tikkun such that in the city of Masa Mechasio, Lo Charva, that it would not be destroyed. What I did was, I made sure that those buildings, those homes that had roofs that were high above the synagogue, would lower their structure so that there would be no roofs above the synagogue. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, I don't understand how Rav Ashi is boasting about saving the city of Mata Machasya, because in fact the city of Masa Machasya was destroyed. V'hacharva. So what did Rav Ashi accomplish? And the answer is, may also avon lo charva. There were other sins that brought about the destruction of the city of Masa Machasya, but it was not the sin of having buildings, homes, that were higher than the synagogue. Lahavdil elef havdolos, the Christians borrowed this concept, and the Jews throughout the history of Europe suffered a great deal because there was no permissibility. The law governed that the churches had to be the highest towers in the city. This is a takeoff of Judaism. The Omar Rava, another statement of Rava Bar Machasi in the name of Rav Chama Bar Guri in the name of Rav. And now he gives you a whole hierarchy about when is it worse and worse and worse to be under the jurisdiction of X, Y, or Z. Tachas Yishmael velo tachas Nochri. It's much worse if the Jewish people are under the control of what's called Edom. Edom is a reference to perhaps what we call Rome, to the Roman Empire. Yishmael, again, things are different today perhaps, but in classic Jewish history, the Jews fared better under Yishmael than they did under Edom. So if I had a choice, I'd rather be in a country that's under Yishmaeli sovereignty rather than Edom sovereignty. Tachas Nochri velo tachas Chabar. Nochri here again is a reference to Edom, to the Edomites. I'd rather be under the Edomites than a worse situation, and that's Chabar. Chabar is a nation of the Persian Empire, and they were consistently implementing religious persecution, preventing the Jews from fulfilling their mitzvahs. However, the Gemara says that you might think intuitively that the best sovereignty would be Jewish sovereignty. Let's be in a Jewish state. Even that could be very tricky, says the Gemara. Why? Because let's assume that the leaders of the community, of the Jewish community, are Talmidei Chachamim. Now, it's very difficult to imagine not insulting the leaders. There are so many situations in which the citizens say things that are not proper. They perhaps have minor rebellions against the leaders of the community. And therefore, Tachas Chabar velo tachas Talmud Chacham. If the Talmud Chacham is your leader, you have to be very, very careful, because any insult to the Talmud Chacham will bring about tremendous punishment. We don't realize how HaKadosh Baruch Hu works the world in such a way that an anger of a Talmud Chacham oser roshem lamala, makes an impression up in the heavens. the heavens shake if a Talmud Chacham is insulted, if he's angry. And therefore it's so difficult to live under the jurisdiction of a Talmud Chacham and not anger that leader. And if we anger that leader, the punishment is going to be so swift and so severe. But the worst of it all, I'd rather be under a Talmud Chacham than under a Yosom Valmona. If, let's say, I have to somehow be sensitive and not hurt the feelings of an orphan, of a widow, the Torah says about the severe punishment if we are insensitive and a widow, let's say, would shed a tear as a result, and the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim says that the punishment that is cheref, total destruction. So we have to be very, very careful about the sensitivity of a yosom or almona. Another statement: Omar Rav Bar Machas Yomar Rav Chama Bar Guri Yomar Rav. And now he goes through the various kinds of diseases and suffering from maladies, and he says there are lower maladies and they're more severe and more severe and more severe until you get to the worst one. Kol Choli says, I can suffer any kind of disease, v'lo choli me'ayin, but not, you know, stomach diseases. The Gemara says in the Dharam that we can visit the sick, but we don't visit someone who's a choli me'ayin, because that would embarrass him, because he cannot maintain his cleanliness and so forth. So you don't want to be a choli me'ayin. You know, people are not going to pay attention to you, and it's going to be very, very lonely. Kol ke'ev, I can take any kind of pain, v'lo ke'ev lev, but not pain in the heart. We know how severe heart attacks are, chas v'sholem, lo aleinu. It's the, I don't know if it's the number one killer, number two killer, you know, there's always a vying for that, but anyway, we can imagine how severe it is to have heart problems. Kol mechush, I'm willing to suffer any kind of suffering. You know, mechush means a feeling uncomfortable. You know, you have a common cold or so forth and so on. But velo mechush harosh, and I think the Gemara probably has in mind here something called a migraine headache. And anyone who has suffered from migraine headaches will tell you it's absolutely horrible. But the worst situation to find yourself in, kol ra, any evil, even the above mentioned, velo isha ra, but not a rough woman. If you're married to a rough woman, I mean, that makes even heart attacks seem easy. The Omar Rama Bar Chasi, again, the same tradition, Omar Rama Bar Chamarav, im you kol hayamim dio. Okay, now we're now talking about the respect that we should have for the Malchus, meaning for the kingship. Again, we're not talking about tyrants. We're talking about a kingship that is sympathetic to the people. He says, if I had all the waters of the world, and they were full of dio, they were full of ink, this sounds like nishmas, and he says, if all the agamim, all the small waterways were kulmosim, were full of those instruments that we need to write with, kol hashamayim yirios, if I could write on all of the heavens, if they were all like curtains that I could write on, kol b'nei odom lavlorim, and every single person was a sofer, he was a scribe, ein maspikim lichtov, behalola shel rishus, we would not be able to write enough in praise of Malchus. We don't realize what the Malchus is going through on a daily basis. Their decisions that they have to make. They have to think about various aspects of the Medina, of the state. They have to collect taxes, make sure that the government continues going. They have to go out to battle. They have to decide law, matters of law. And this is all on a daily basis. I'm reminded of the Gemara at the beginning of Brachos that describes David HaMelech's daily daily schedule and how he went from one issue to another issue to another. There were financial issues, there were issues of military campaigns and so forth. We cannot sing the praises enough of a good Malchus. Again, we're not talking about tyrants. Maikra'a, where do we find a pasuk as a source? And the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Mishlei. Amar Rav Masharshia, Shamayim larum, the heavens are up on top, v'aretz laomek, and the land is down here. The lev malachim, the heart of the kings, ein cheker. Ein cheker means we have no way of appreciating, we have no way of knowing exactly how profound and how challenging their daily decisions are. The Amar Rava bar Machasya, Amar Machama bar Gurya, Amar Rav. And now we have the sugya called Tainis Chalom. Today it's a little bit rare, but back in the day, if you suffered a very, very scary kind of dream, and you wake up and you're afraid of what this dream is telling you, because Chazal tell us a dream is 1/60th of prophecy, then you take upon yourself a fast. And the purpose of the fast is to be mevatel, to nullify this decree up in heaven. Yafe tainis chalom. But this fast is so powerful to undermine the decree in heaven. Ke'esh l'na'ores. He gives a mashal of the na'ores. The na'ores is those fibers of linen. When you shake the linen and beat out the fibers, you get little fibers and they go up in smoke immediately. So the power of a tainis chalom is so strong, is so powerful, that it's mevatel the decree, like a match will set fire to these little fibers. Amar Rav Chisda says, but the most powerful and effective fast is going to be bo bayom. Immediately on the same day, you know, you went to sleep that night, and the next morning, as a result of the terrible dream that you suffered, you took upon yourself to fast. And now we get to our halachic discussion. The Amar of Yosef, Afilu B'Shabbos. You're allowed to fast a tainis chalom even on the Sabbath. Now, normally on the Sabbath, we have a mitzvah of eating 3 sudos. We have a mitzvah called Onik Shabbos, but in this case, we're going to override the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos for the sake of a tainis chalom. And here we have a famous opinion of the Rashba, the Tur, and many other Rishonim and Achronim, that for a person to eat on that day would not be Oneg. On the contrary, his Oneg, his state of being in an Oneg situation, is a result of his fasting. That's how upset and perturbed he is by the bad dream. And the Gemara tells us a story about this. Rabbi Yoshua Bered Rav Idi Ikla Lebe Rav Ashi. Rabbi Yoshua came to the house of Rav Ashi, and they put out a beautiful banquet in honor of Rabbi Yoshua, and they expected him to eat from the banquet. What was that banquet made of? Avdilei, they prepared for him igla tilsa. Now, igla tilsa is considered the finest veal and the tastiest veal that you can imagine. What makes it so special? And this is a Gemara in many different places. The Gemara says that this is the third egel, the third calf, that's born to its mother. And the first two calves that are born to the mother cow, are born when the cow, the mother, is somewhat young, inexperienced, doesn't have that power, that koach, and therefore the first two calves are relatively unhealthy. Unhealthy, I don't mean that they're unhealthy, I mean they don't have that strength, that power. And the third igla, agola, this egel, number 3 that's born, is the most healthy of them all. And they went out of their way to create a meal for Rabbi Yoshua in honor of him, and they got an egla tilsa, very rare. Amrule. So the household of Rav Ashi turned to Rav Yoshua, and they say to him, Lito mar midi, take a taste of it. Why aren't you eating? Amar lehu, and he responded, I can't eat today. Betainis yasivna, I'm sitting in a fast. Amrule, so what's the big deal? Okay, you're a fast. You break your fast. Lo savra le mar, do you not agree with Hod Rabbi Yehuda, the statement of Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Rabbi Yehuda, lo ve adam taniso uporea. If a person accepted upon himself a fast, and then he went ahead and he ate on that day, porea. Porea means he'll take another day, designated as a fast day, he'll be makabel yom tainis, and he'll eat today, and he'll replace today by fasting on another day. So why not, you know, we prepared this beautiful meal in your honor, take a taste, and you'll pay up the chov, and you'll fast on a different day. Amar le, Rabbi Yeshua says, no, this is not the kind of a fast that I want to postpone. Tainis chalomhu, this is a fast because I had a bad dream. The Omar, and now he quotes the whole tradition here, Yafe tainis lechalom, keish lini ores, and Omar avchizu bo bayom, Omar av Yosef afilu b'shabes. The significance and the power of this fast is because it's bo bayom, it's on this day. This is the bad day, with a bad ominous sign, because I had this dream, and I have to fast on this day. That's going to be the power, the effective tainis, that's going to be mavatel, it's going to undo the decree in heaven of that chalom, and I'll tell you of that terrible dream. And I'll tell you, I'll illustrate to you how important it is to fast on that day itself and not postpone it, that even for the sake of this tainis chalom on Shabbos, instead of eating my meal on Shabbos, I'm going to fast on Shabbos. Why? Why not say, well, fast on Sunday, you'll pay it up tomorrow? No, it's urgent, it's time urgent, it has to be fasted today. Now Rabosai, after all this string of statements of Rav, the name Rav Chama, the name of Rav, we now go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says the following, that when it's time for tefillah, it's mincha time, we don't start a meal. However, imischilu, if he started a meal, then ain mafsik, and we don't force him to terminate the meal, we'll tell him finish the meal, and hopefully he'll daven mincha after he finishes the meal. However, the exception to this rule is mafsikin l'kriyat shma. So for the sake of tefillah, we're going to tell him to continue his meal. He started the meal, he loosened his belt, he started his meal, and he continues. But if it's time for kriyat shma, we're not going to allow him to continue his meal. He's got to make a hefsek, he's got to terminate his meal in order to recite kriyat shma. Kriyat shma is more powerful than tefillah. Kriyat Shema is Doraisa. Tefillah, according to most Rishonim, is Drabbanan. So the Gemara asks, Hatani Le Reisha. The Mishnah says at the beginning, it says, Mischilu Ein Mafsikin. I understand that you can repeat yourself and tell me, but in the case of Kriyat Shema Mafsikin, but why did you have to repeat yourself and say, Mischilu Ein Mafsikin? Right, there are four superfluous words in this Mishnah. The Mishnah has already said earlier that Ein Mafsikin L'Tfilah. So you could have said Ein Mafsikin L'Tfilah, but Mafsikin L'Kriyat Shema. Why do you repeat yourself and say Ein Mafsikin L'Tfilah, but Im Ischilu Ein Mafsikin? I mean, you're just repeating the same thing over. Hatana Le'Reisha. We have it already in the beginning of the Mishnah. It says Im Ischilu Ein Mafsikin. So the Gemara answers that there are two chidushim here in the Mishnah. The Mishnah finds it necessary to double up because it's telling you two different dinim. What are these two different dinim? One is for the sake of tefillah. And for the sake of tefillah, we're going to allow you to continue your meal once you started your meal, and you'll daven after you complete the meal. But now we have another chidush. Hasan, seif hasan, l'divrei Torah. The Mishnah wants to tell us a chiddush that if a person is studying Torah, then he is not mafsik his Torah study. And what does this mean? You see, you might say that we're talking about a case of a person who started a meal. No. That's not the discussion in the Sefer, the Mishnah. The Mishnah in the Sefer is addressing a different question. And that question is, what happens when it's the Zman of Tefillah? So we said if it's the Zman of Tefillah, you don't start a meal. But if you started the meal, you'll continue the meal and you'll daven after the meal. What happens in the following case? You started learning Torah, and now it's time for davening. Do you stop and terminate your Torah study for the sake of tefillah? Well, we said in the case of a meal, you don't stop your meal. We're going to allow you to go on. And you'll daven after the meal. What are we going to tell a person who started learning Divrei Torah? And the answer is, we're going to tell him to continue his Divrei Torah. And he's going to daven a little bit later. So the Gemara wants to know, okay, that makes sense if he's got plenty of time to learn. But what happens if it's getting very late? And if he doesn't stop learning, you know, it's going to be that borderline, that time period which is pressing for tefillah. So what are we going to tell him? Do we tell him continue learning, and this is going to go on, who knows, for hours, and he's going to jeopardize the possibility of his tefillah? So the Gemara says, this Sanya, we have a brisa that says, chaverim shayu oskim batorah, and we have to figure out who these chaverim are, our colleagues, so to speak. Who are our colleagues? We'll get back to that in just a second. And they were studying Torah. So if Kriyat Shema comes along, mafsikin leKriyat Shema. Kriyat Shema, as we said before, is a mitzvah d'oraisa, b'shabachav kumecha. You have to stop, whether it's your eating, whether it's your learning. All this has to stop for the sake of Kriyat Shema. But ein mafsikin leTefillah. But in the case of these chaverim, they don't have to stop their learning for the sake of tefillah. Now you and I would have said, well, that's a pella. I mean, that doesn't make sense. You know, Kriyat Shema, I'm sorry, tefillah is what we call a mitzvah veres. You know, it's a very definite time period. Torah is v'gisa bo yom v'layla. So why shouldn't we tell him that for the sake of tefillah as a mitzvah veres, he should desist, he should terminate his Torah? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, you don't know who these chaverim are. Lo shanu, when did we learn this halacha? That he's going to continue his learning. And he will not terminate his learning. Even for the sake of tefillah, that's Ela Kigon Rav Shim Bar Yochai v'chaverov. And now the Gemara introduces a whole new category. And that's called Shetorosam Umnosam. These people are exclusively Torah students. They're dedicated exclusively to the study of Torah. They get a new status in halacha. And their status is Torasum Nasam. They are dedicated to the Torah study. And therefore, they can continue their learning. Aval kagon anu. But us guys, us regular fellows who have time for learning Baruch Hashem, and we do our learning, but we're not Torasum Nasam, then we have to be mafsik, and mafsik l'kriyat shma ulit filah. So postpone your learning for a few minutes, obviously for kriyat shma, and even for tefillah, and you're going to have to daven and then resume your Torah study. You're not in this category of Torah sum nasam. So the Gemara immediately asks, for Asanya, we have a brisa that says, kishem shem mafsik l'tefillah, kach ein mafsik l'kriyat shma. It sounds like even when we talk about a person who fits the category of Toraso Umnaso, then not only does he continue his learning, if you will, at the expense of his tefillah, but even at the expense of his Kriyat Shema. Now that can't be. We don't understand. Even in the case of Toraso Umnaso, which puts tefillah on perhaps a lower madrega than Torah, because Torah Simnasu means Torah is on top, but what's on top of Torah in the hierarchy is Kriyat Shema. So how could it be that Ein Mafsikin LeKriyat Shema? So Gemara says, no, you misunderstood that price. That price is talking about a very, very special case. of Ein Mafsikin L'Kriyat Shema. Ki Tani Ahi Be'ibur Shana. Right, we have seven great scholars that go up to an attic, and there they have a Masu Matan, a back and forth deliberations, based on many, many different considerations, whether they should be Ma'abar the Shana and add an extra month of Adar. And they cannot be disturbed. They have to be totally, exclusively focused on what they're doing. And during those deliberations, they would not terminate even to take a break for Kriyat Shema. How long does it take to say Kriyat Shema? No. There are no distractions here. The Omer of Adabar Ava, V'chein Tanu Sabi Da'agro Nisa, Omer Abulazir Reb Tzadok Shayinu Oskin B'Yibrushana B'Yavne, I remember, he says, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, when we were up there in the attic and we were deliberating about Ibur Shana, it was in the city of Yavne, Lo ayinu mafsikin. We would not take a break, not for tefillah, but not even for Kriyat Shema, lo Kriyat Shema v'lo tefillah. So it comes out that there are three dinim here. Let's just summarize. For a regular person, rank and file Jew, he'll be mafsik, his Torah study, for the sake of tefillah and certainly for the sake of Kriyat Shema. If he's Torasum Noso, he will not desist his Torah study for the sake of tefillah, but only for the sake of Kriyat Shema. And if he's a scholar who is now preoccupied with the issue of deliberating on Ibur Shana, then even for Kriyat Shema, he's not mafsik. And here we get up to the Mishnah of what's called Lo Yetzei Achayet B'machto. This Mishnah is the first Mishnah that deals with some of the practical halachos of Meleches Hotza. In the previous Mishnah, at the beginning of the Masechta, we dealt with abstract definitions of Hotza, Hachnasa, Doraisas, Derabanan, Zakira, Hanacha. Now we're dealing with some of the practical issues that begin on Erev Shabbos. And we're worried about certain carrying on Erev Shabbos that might lead to carrying on Shabbos itself. So for example, Lo Yetzei Achayet B'machto, the tailor is holding on to his needle, his sewing needle, and it's Erev Shabbos, Somach L'Chashecha. It's almost time for Shabbos. It's almost sunset. And the Yerushalmi is going to discuss exactly when is it Somach L'Chashecha, and probably it means after what's called Mincha Ketana. So we're in a period of an hour and a quarter before nightfall. In that time period, it's right before Bein HaShemoshos, the Chayat should not go out with his needle. Why? Shema Yishkach V'Yetzeh. He might actually, if he, you know, on a regular basis, he carries around his utensil, his needle, so late before on Friday before Shabbos, maybe on one occasion he will, heaven forbid, carry it out on Shabbos after it got dark. And so forth, and so too, lo halavlor bikul moso, a scribe who carries his quill, he should not be doing so, running around with his quill on Erev Shabbos, right before nightfall. And now we have a whole new section of gzeros. These gzeros that we're about to learn about are Shabbosdik gzeros. Before we were talking about Erev Shabbos, now we're moving into Shabbos. Lo yafle, or lo yafale, es kelov. Now the word kelim here, and in many Mishnais, means begadim, and his begadim have certain bugs on them, and he's not allowed to remove these bugs. We'll see why. And lo yikra liara ner. He should not read. They didn't have electricity like we have, and they used to read next to the candlelight. And here we get into the famous gzera of Hatoya, Shemayates haner. I mean, there's an entire parak in Masechet Shabbos, the second parak, which is almost exclusively dedicated to this concept of Shemayates haner. In those days, they kept the oil was held in a receptacle, and the oil was tipped over in order to feed the wick, and sometimes the wick was flickering and you were almost naturally, intuitively tempted to pick up the receptacle and tilt it in such a way that the oil would come down, and that's called Meleches Havara, one of the 39 Melechos. Now it could be possible that lo yifale es Kalev is also referring to the same Gzeirah of Shema Yateh, because if you're cleaning off your begadim, you know, from very small little bugs, you know, you need the light, so you come close to the light and you might tilt over the light as you're examining it. Now the Mishnah goes on to talk about someone called a chazan. And a chazan is not exactly what you and I think of a chazan, you know, like Chatzkel Riddle of Shalom in my shul where I was brought up. You know, that's not this is not chazonis. The chazan was the person who would call up, I guess you might call it a gabbai today, who would call up the Sheva Olim L'Kriyas HaTorah. And he would have to show each Ola exactly where to read in the Sefer Torah. So he would tell the Balkore, you know, finish here. The Ola was called up and he said, look here, this is where we're going to start. The old minig was that when you got called up for an aliyah, you would read that aliyah. The Sfaradim are still makpid on that even today. So the Mishnah says, Be'emes Amru, whenever you see Be'emes Amru, it's telling you that this is the final word, La'aloch L'maisa. Hachazon, Roeh Heichan Atinokos Korin. How is the Chazon on Shabbos? Well, let's say it's Friday night, he's preparing for Shabbos day, you know, when he'll be calling up people to the Torah. How does he review exactly where this aliyah should end and where the new aliyah should begin so he could instruct the people? So what he's allowed to do, he can't read the Torah La'or HaNer, because as we said before, we have a gzeira that we don't allow you to read close to the Or HaNer. But what he does is, he sort of stands over the children, the young children who are studying next to their Rebbe, and you see that Friday night was not a day off for the children. And Korin, what they used to do is the children would read the parshios, the Seder parshios, and the children would be taught by the Rebbe exactly where they should begin and where should they end. And the Chazan now, although he's not allowed to read from the Oran Ner, he can look at the children who are close to the Oran Ner, Avalhulo Yikra, but he's not reading to the Oran Ner, and he's going to listen to the children as they read, and he's going to be able to review exactly where they started and where they stopped, how they divided up the parsha. Kayotze Bazeh, Kayotze Bo, we have another Gzera. Now this Gzera has nothing to do with Shabbos. This has to do with what's called a Bias Nida, otherwise known as a Zava. And the Torah says that if a man has a relationship with his wife and she's a Zava, that's a Chiyuv Kares, that's a very, very severe violation. And therefore, Lo Yochal HaZavim HaZava. Even though they're both sick, they're both sort of in a weak state, but if he and she have an intimate relationship, because it's a husband and wife, is they shouldn't be eating together. They have to eat separately. Whatever that means, we'll talk about that. Mipnei hergel aver, because eating together, let's say from the same plate, is a very romantic kind of experience, and it might lead to who knows what, and it'll violate an Isur Kares. And now, Rabbosei, we're going to start the Gemara on the last two lines on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Tnan Hosam, we're going to learn now a Mishnah in Masechta Erevin. Lo Yamod Adam Brishus HaYochid V'Yishteh Brishus HaRabim or Brishus HaRabim V'Yishteh Brishus HaYochid. Am I allowed to stand in one of these two Rishuyos and extend my head into the other Rishus in order to drink water that's dripping down in the other Rishus? And the Mishnah says it's prohibited, because we're always afraid that maybe he's going to carry a utensil in order to collect the water, and he'll forget himself, and he'll take the utensil over to the other Rishus. And that could be a violation of Meleches Hotzah. However, they did permit him in a case where he moves his entire body over to the other Rishus, because that makes it a Heker. A Heker means we remind him, hey, it's Shabbos, buddy. This is not normally the way you would do it. Normally you would just stretch out your arm and pick up the water from the next Rishus. Here, you're forced to move your entire body, and that's going to be a reminder, hey buddy, I'm doing this in a very unusual way because it's Shabbos. And now, Rabosai, we turn to Daf Yud Aleph Amid Beis, the last two words in the Mishnah in Erevin that we were quoting, V'chein Begas. Gas is a place where they would gather together the grapes, and they would crush the grapes and make wine. What does V'chein Begas have to do with anything that we've been discussing? That we don't know, and we're going to see that in Mirtz Hashem in just a few minutes. Now, at this point, the Gemara is going to present a machlokes between Abaye and Rava. This machlokes has to do with the case of not allowing a person to stretch part of his body, a small segment of his body or his arm, into another reshus in order to drink. And what would you be allowed to do that if you're not standing in a Rishus HaRabim, but rather you're standing in a Carmelis? As we discussed at great length back on Daf Vav Amid Aleph, a Carmelis, which on a Doraisa level is called a Makom Petar, it's neither Rishus HaYachid nor is it Rishus HaRabim, but the Rabbanan said it has the appearance of a Rishus HaRabim, because it is a place that's accessible to the Rabim. And therefore, even though it's not a Rishus HaRabim, the Rabbanan said we're going to consider it like a Rishus HaRabim, because we're afraid if we allow you to carry in a Carmelis, or from a Rishus HaYachid into a Carmelis, or for a Carmelis out into a Rishus HaYachid, you'll confuse that with a Rishus HaRabim. So that was the Gzeirah of Carmelis. Now we have another Gzeirah. The Gzeirah says, as we saw in the Mishnah in Erevin, Lo Yamad Adam Rishus, etc. V'yishteh Rishus, etc. Because he might come to carry a keli from one rishus to the other. What happens if it's a rishus hayochin and a carmelis, or a carmelis and a rishus harabim? So Abaye is going to take a very strong position on this lechumra, and this has implications all over Shas, even though we're learning one sugya notzah, but we shouldn't be myopic about it. This really has tremendous sound waves throughout Shas. Iboy lehu carmelis mai. The man is standing in a Carmelis, and there's an Iser to carry from a Carmelis into Rishus HaYochid on a Drabbanan level, because Vigzera it looks like a Rishus HaRabim. My, what's his din if he wants to stand in Rishus HaYochid or in Rishus HaRabim, and he wants to put his head over the line into a Carmelis, or from a Carmelis into a Rishus HaYochid, Rishus HaRabim? Mar Rabbi, hihi. You know, the Mishnah said that we're afraid that he might carry the kli from one rishus to the other. And midrabanan, we have a gzeirah of Carmelis. A Carmelis is considered a rishus, midrabanan. So we have to be very machmir. So Rava says to him, what are you talking about? He gufa gzeirah v'anan nekum v'nigzar gzeirah l'gzeirah? Says Rava, I don't understand. We have a principle that we don't piggyback one gzeirah on top of another. So Carmelis is a gzeirah because he might confuse it with Rishus HaRabim. And Lo Yishteh is a gzeirah because he might carry the kli from one Rishus to the other. So now you're going to pile one gzeirah onto the other? In other words, even in the worst case scenario, that'll carry his kli because he's drinking in the other Rishus, but it's a Carmelis. And a Carmelis itself is only a gzeirah. So we have to make a gzeirah onto a gzeirah? Which reminds me of a very famous sugya in Masechta Chulin about whether or not you're allowed to eat chicken on one part of the table and your friend is having a piece of cheese on the other side of the table, because we paskin that chicken with cheese is only Drabbanan. And maybe you'll eat one from each other's plate. I mean, even in the worst case scenario, you're only going to violate an Issa Drabbanan. Omar Abaye. So Abaye says, I have a proof to my conclusion. So maybe you have a logical objection, but I have a proof. Minah midile, where do I know this from? Dikatani, it says at the end of the Mishnah in Erevin that we'll learn v'chein begas. The same thing applies to the grape press. My gas, what kind of gas are we talking about? Where is it located? Irishus hayochid, if we're talking about a case of a gas. Now the gas was a very large machine, a big machinery. And it was 10 tfachim high, and it was 4 tfachim wide. And back on Daf Vav, we learned that any area, like an amud or a tail or a kosel, that is 10 tfachim high and 4 tfachim in width, is called a Rishus HaYachid. You know, if that be the case, if the gas is a Rishus HaYachid, Tnina,
then the Mishnah is just repeating itself. What's it telling you? That you can't stand the Rishus HaRabim and eat, and lean over your head to drink on a gas. The gas is the Rishus HaYachid. Rishus HaRabim, if let's say this gas is less than 10 tefachim high, and it's 3 tefachim high, and it's in the middle of a Rishus HaRabim, is then Tanina. Once again, we have an admission that you're not allowed to stand in Rishus HaRabim, a Rishus HaYochid, and lean over into a Rishus HaRabim. Elalav, the only possibility that V'chein V'gas is adding anything, is caramelis. It must be that this gas has a din of a caramelis. It means it's between 3 tefachim and 10 tefachim, and it's used by the Rabim, and therefore it has the status of a caramelis. And the Mishnah is now being mechadesh, that not only did we make this gzera that you can't put your head into another reshus, but even if you're putting your head into a caramelis, that's also prohibited. Rava Omar, Rava says that this V'chein V'gas has nothing in the world to do with Shabbos. This halacha V'chein V'gas, says Rava, has to do with what we call the halacha of Maser. What does it mean? A person grows fruits in Eretz Yisrael. When I say fruits, I mean grains or fruits like Zeisim V'anovim. He's not chayev, according to the Torah law, in Maaser, until what's called Gemar Malacha, which means when he finishes the whole process and he takes it into his house. That's called Knisa Rias Pnei Abayis. Now, Midrabanan, they said, you know what? You're not allowed to eat even before you take it into the house if it's an Achilas Keva. But if it's an achilas haroi, a kind of temporary eating, you know, you grab something and you eat it, that we're going to allow because midoraisa, it's not yet tevel. Rav Amar v'chein begas linyan maser. What is this gas telling me about the laws of maser? V'chein omar Rav Sheshes, also Rav Sheshes says v'chein begas linyan maser. This nan, we have a mission in the fourth parak of Masros, shosim alagas. You're allowed to drink the wine that begins to come out at the early in the process of crushing the grapes in the gas. He hasn't yet taken the yayin outside of this area, which is called the gas. And the question is, what kind of drinking are we allowing him? Now, it's true that the wine has gone through process number one, which is called Gmar Malacha. It hasn't yet been brought into the house. We're allowed to drink an achilas, or in this case, a shsias aroy, a temporary basis. Well, what do you mean a temporary basis? Are you going to put this wine back? Let's say, for example, you drink some of the wine and you have some extra wine. Are you going to return it to the gas? Well, l'chor, that depends upon the following factors, as we'll see. Now we'll start with the Tanakama of this brisa. We have three shitas in this brisa, in this Mishnah, in Maisers. The first shita, which is the most mekel shita, that's Rabbi Meir. He says, "Bein alchamin, bein alatzone." Now, before you drink wine, what you do is something called miziga. Miziga means you add water to the wine. The wine itself is too concentrated to drink, so you dilute it with water. What kind of water? So you can put in hot water, and you can put in cold water. Says Rabbi Meir, makes no difference. Even after you pour in the water, you're still potter from maser, your shtia is considered a shtia sarra, you haven't taken the wine, you know, in its barrels into the house, and therefore it's a shtia sarra. That's Rabbi Meir, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik Mechayev, Rabbi Elazar says, no, you have to be mafrish maser before you drink from the wine, because your shtia, your drinking, is called a shtia skva. And once you do the meziga, you've already demonstrated that now this wine is drinkable. That makes it into a shtias kva. And you're chayiv in mas, so we're not going to allow you to drink. Chachamim omrim, the chachamim shita, the third shita, is that it depends. What are you mixing into the concentrated wine? If it's chamin, if it is hot water, then what happens with hot water is that it kicks off a process called chimutz. The wine starts to ferment. And once the wine starts to ferment, then you don't pour it back into the gas, meaning you know, you would ruin all the other wine if you put it back. So you're taking it out on a permanent basis. Whatever you drink, you drink. Whatever you're left with, I don't know, put it in the refrigerator, do whatever you want with it, but you're certainly not going to put it back. That makes it into a shtias keva. But al atzonein, if you're only adding cold water, then that tarovis, that mizug called dilution, does not change the chemical structure of the wine. And if you had any leftover wine, you'd put it back into the gas. And therefore, patur, that would be a shtias aroi mitneshu machzir es hamosar, because if you had any leftover wine, he will put it back to where he took it from. And therefore, it's called a shtias aroi. The bottom line is that this discussion has nothing to do with Shabbos, says Rava. This problem of gas is a problem of whether he's allowed to drink from the gas. Do the Rabbanan say, well, it's not considered a shesias aroi, but it's considered a shesias keva? And that's the whole discussion. Tanan, we learned in that Mishnah, lo yetze achayet b'machto somech l'chashecha shem yishkach v'yetze. We don't allow the tailor to go out with his needle because he may forget it. So my love, the Gemara thinks, isn't it a case of tchuva lo b'bigdo, where the way that the tailors used to take their needles is they used to put it, you know, inside the beggar. That's how they would carry it. So now, the Gemara asks, I don't understand. Even if in the worst case scenario, he would walk out with his needle attached to him on Shabbos after Chashecha, that's what you're worried about. That's only an Issa Drabbanan. That's not called a Hotzah. Hotzah means when you carry something with your hands and not when you put it into your beggar. You know, you've seen people who have flags, you know, the Canadian flag, they attach it to their lapel, right? So that would not be Hotzah Doraisa. Lo, says the Gemara, Denokit Lebi Yadei, the prohibition of the Gzera. Now Mishnah is talking about a case where the Chayat is holding on to his needle in his hands, and that's Derech Hotzah. And if he would forget and carry that on Shabbos, he would violate Melechas Hotzah. And the Gemara now proves it. Toshma. We learned in a brisa, lo yetze achayat b'machto atchuva lo b'bigdo, my lav be'er of Shabbos. Oh, this seems to be indicative of the fact that even if it's connected into his garment, he's not allowed to go out with it on Erev Shabbos. And this is a gzera. And this, by the way, would support Abai that we said that with regard to Meleches Hotzah, we're not worried about Gzeira L'Gzeira, right? Because what are you saying? He might do this at night, and even if he does it at night, that itself is only awesome. And Rabbanan, lo, the Gemara says, we're not talking about Erev Shabbos. Kisanya, this price is talking about on Shabbos itself. And the Chacham were worried that if we allow him to put his needle into his beged on Shabbos, then tomorrow he might carry it with his hands. So again, Tchuvalo b'bigdo on Erev Shabbos, that would be a gzera l'gzera. That would be a double gzera, because maybe he'll do it b'chashecha, and maybe he'll carry the needle with his hands. So that's okay. But if it's Tchuvalo b'bigdo on Shabbos, that we're not going to allow him to do because of the single gzera that he might carry. Vasanya, the Gemara asks a kasha. Lo yetze achayit. We have a brice that says b'machto atchuva b'bigdo be erev Shabbos im chashecha. He's not allowed to go with the knife, with the needle in his beged on erev Shabbos. That's already a gzera l'gzera. That would support Abai's position that we are worried on Shabbos about malacha sotzav gzera l'gzera. Gemara answers homani Rabbi Yehuda. This is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda has a very unique shita with regard to malacha sotzav, and he says that malacha sotzav is subjective. What's considered Meleches Hotzah? It's different for you than it is for me. The Omar Rav Yehuda says, Uman, if a person is a professional, Derech Umnaso, and he carries something according to his profession, Chayav, even though everyone else would be potter, because that's not the normal way you carry something, but if for you, in your profession, that's the way you carry it, you're Chayav. And therefore the Chayat is going to be Chayav for Meleches Hotzah when it's Tchuva B'bigdo, because that's the way a Chayat, a tailor, carries his needle. This Sanya, as we learned in a Braisa, Lo Yetze a Chayat B'machto a Tchuva Lo B'bigdo V'lo Nagar B'kesam. Right, the carpenter used to put his ruler, you know, his sargel, it's called the Hebrew, he used to put it behind his ear. and Sheba'oz, not behind his ear. Velo Yetze Sorek, and we're talking about now someone who's in charge of combing clothing to, you know, to remove in its natural state all sorts of fibers. B'meshicha. B'meshicha is a kind of a string that he uses, and he puts it in his ozen. Velo Gardi, he's a weaver, and he's carrying ira, some sort of piece of tzemer he would carry behind his ear so that people would know that he's of that profession. Velo tzava bidugma, and a dyer would not carry a piece of color dyed wool around his neck. You know, that's how he showed people the various colors he has to say. Velo shulchani. Shulchani is a person who's a money changer. Bidinar sheba ozno, he would carry a certain coin again behind his ear and people would know he's the money changer. Vim yotza potter. But in all these cases, if you would carry it out on Shabbos behind your ear or in your beged, you'd be potter. That's according to Rabbi Meir. And it's also, it's only also been Rabban. But Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Uman Derechum Naso, Chayav, Shar Kol Adam Potur. In all these cases, he'd be Chayav Hotza, even though it's behind his ear. For you and I, that would be unusual Hotza, and it's not Kedarko, we'd be Potur. But for these people, then we would be Chayav. Tonachada. We'll very quickly finish up, because I see it's late. Tonachada, we have one brisa that says, Lo Yetze Hazov Bekiso. The Zav, who has certain emissions from his lower parts, he would put a kiss, he would put some sort of a pouch that he would attach to his body with a belt in order to receive this Ziva, this kind of emission. The Yatza Potter. But if he carries the kiss in such a way that it's around his body, he's Potter. Aval also, but the Rabbanon prohibited. V'tan Yidduk, we have a different price that says, Lo Yetze. He's violating a malach of hotzah d'oraisa. How do we reconcile this? Amar Rav Yosef lo kasha. Ha Rabbi Meir v'ha Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir says that there's only one derech hotzah that has to be objective and has to be common for everybody. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's very relative, it's very subjective. If for you, this is the way you would carry it, even if it was during the week, you would put this kiss around your body, your lower body, then on Shabbos you're going to be chayim. So Abaye asks Akasha, Amalei Abaye, Emer Deshamet Leila Rabbi Meir. When did we hear the Rabbi Meir says you're potter michatos? That's b'midi delav hainu urche. That's something that's not usual. You know, who would carry something behind his ear or pin it up to his clothing? That's where Rabbi Meir says you're potter. But midi dehainu urche. You know, if a person is nebuch ill, and this is the way he dresses up, you know, he puts this belt around with the pocket that collects the ziva, mishametle. Did we ever hear that Rabbi Meir would say you're potter in such a case? No. There's no reason to say that Rabbi Meir would say you're potter, because that's not something that's unusual. It may be unusual for you, but if you were in those circumstances, it would not be unusual. Dilo tema hachi. If you don't agree with me, then elameata, you'll have to ask the following question. Hejot shechoka kak kav bebakas b'shabis is Rabbi Meir hachi nami dilo mechavi. Let's say, for example, nebuch a person who is not a professional, but he has a kav bibakas, he has a piece of wood that he attaches to his body because he has to, you know, it's a prosthetic, how do you pronounce it? Prosthetic? A limb of his body. Is hachinami d'lo mechayvi, because for you and I, it's not derech uma, it's not the way that you do it. And the Gemara says, you would be chayav. Ella says the Gemara, and now the Gemara is going to get into the laws of Ziva. We don't have time for that today, but Emir Tzashem, we'll try to finish this up tomorrow. So let's see where we're up to. We're up to Ella Omarav Hemnuna, which you'll see is approximately 5 lines up from the bottom of the Amud, precisely 6 lines up from the bottom of the Amud.